I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out for almost 6 years I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
It is I, CM Jew, the best Jew in the world, here with a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews, right here on the Absolution Network. I am glad to have you all again. It is, well, not, it's 2 weeks from WrestleMania and everything, and you know, last week I just couldn't have anybody on because I'm still pissed at everything that happened. But, you know, that's not the case this week. As this week, we will be reviewing the very first ECW pay-per-view ever, Barely Legal. And, you know, of course, since it's barely legal, I need a witness to, you know, to prove that, you know, they're over 18, so I won't get in trouble in anything. This man hails from the home of the five-time WCW World Heavyweight Champion, Booker T. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the man with the straw hat, Shin Tiger Curl.
Hello, everyone. My name is Paul Heyman. I am representing my client, Shin Tiger Curl. And if you believe that three is enough for my client, Shin Tiger Curl, I regret to inform you that my client, Shin Tiger Curl, demands five.
Oh, sorry, man.
I had to do it.
Hey, Big E put a pretty decent promo on tonight on SmackDown.
I wasn't able to catch it, so...
I just love that he mentioned the pop, lock, and drop it competition, and... JBL is like, what the hell is a pop, lock, and drop it competition? And the sad part is, I knew exactly what a pop, drop, and lock contest was. It's obviously a weightlifting competition, but I actually know what, you know, there are terms in weightlifting of popping it, locking it, and, you know, a locking it is, you know, when you have the bar like underneath your chin with a thing like that, and you hold it in place, and then you drop it. And so it's basically, it's a pull, you lock it under your chin, you hold it, and then you drop it.
Mm-hmm.
But why I know this when I don't lift weights, I have no idea.
That brings up a good question, Matt. How do you know about the pop, lock, and drop it?
I read way too many books. I wish there was an easier answer. I had 7 years where all I've done is, like, look for information. Like, oh, well, that's an interesting subject. Let me read about that. Why, I don't know.
You're in the same boat as me. I pretty much read random shit. Like, I'm probably the only person in all of Houston, Texas that knows that the honey badger has the Guinness World Record as the most fearless animal on the face of the earth.
How can you measure that?
According to the crack.com, they call it just not give animals that just don't give a fuck. And honey badgers give zero fucks. So to quote crack.com, honey badgers could fill the Louvre Museum with the amount of fucks it just does not give.
Are we talking about the actual honey badger or the one that smoked too much weed and cost himself a draft?
No, I'm...
Number one draft pick from LSU. Oh, the real one. Okay.
I'm talking about the real one. The real one gives no fuck. It will attack anything. And it goes for the nuts, too.
That's why me and honey badgers can't be friends. You know, I don't mind if you're fearless or anything, but when you go after a man's jewels, that's crossing a line in the sand.
And it's also that time to find out just who I am.
Yes, who you, I am. Hmm. But speaking of lines in the sands and evolution, we've had some time to let this past year's WrestleMania evolve on us. So
indeed.
Of course, after me and Shin Tiger were on last week's epic, WrestleMania review of the WrestleCast. Well, not the first one, the second one that went 3 hours.
Yep.
That featured me and Maddie.
Pretty much going 12 rounds.
12 rounds with John Cena as a special guest referee. Oh, by the way, if you had to call that fight, who would you say won that fight?
I'm gonna call it a draw because, frankly, you both had good points.
I'll take that.
Yeah.
And I think we did come to that conclusion of like, look, this is always going to be the most decisive WrestleMania for obvious reasons because there's two camps of thought, and it really depends on which camp of thought you fall into.
Yeah, that's true. But personally. I think you both made good points, but even after it's been marinating for me for about 2 weeks, I still, for the life of me, cannot get as upset about it as a lot of people have. I don't know why. I mean,
I can respect that. It's just for me, I'm not gonna be upset about it forever. But for me, I think what upsets me the most is the missed opportunities.
Yeah. I mean, it was a shitty match. I am not disagreeing with anyone there. I'm not saying that it was Undertaker's best match. It will probably go down as one of his worst WrestleMania matches.
I mean, when you start making the match with the great Gonzalez look good, you're in trouble.
Yeah, the only reason anyone remembers... the Giant Gonzalez match was because of Undertaker's entrance with that fucking vulture.
Yeah.
Other than that, people would just want to forget that match. Matter of fact, let's just forget that whole fucking pay-per-view.
Well, I haven't reviewed that pay-per-view yet, so I still have to cover it down the line. Still, I think the ultimate thing is that, 2 weeks out, still, really the only thing anybody remembers is Taker losing.
Yeah.
I guess that's going to be the ultimate measure for it is 6 months later, if you ask about WrestleMania 30, what are people going to remember it for?
Taker.
A year later.
Taker losing.
What are they going to remember 5 years later?
Sad but true, Taker losing.
And to me, that's the pivotal point about all of that. It's sad that that's supposed to be Daniel Bryan's coming out party, and it's never going to be remembered for that. It's going to be remembered for Taker losing.
Yeah, well. Daniel Bryan should be used to getting the shaft at WrestleMania, isn't by now?
Well, speaking of getting the shaft, I was out at the bar yesterday, and I saw this girl, and I took her back and everything. We had a great time, and her wallet happened to fall over, and I saw that she was 18. I'm like, oh my god, thank god she's barely legal. Speaking of barely legal.
Yes. I bow to you, Mattis Lionheart, master of the segues.
Tonight's review is the very first ECW pay-per-view ever, which is ECW Barely Legal, which takes place in the ECW arena in the great city of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and to be more correct, in the great city of South Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Ooh.
You know. I live an hour away from Philly. I know for a fact that, you know, if people in South Philly do not like to be, like, lumped together with the jerks from North Philly.
Okay. I understand. But
let's go away from the ECW arena, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The attendance was a whopping 1,170, and it took place on April 13th, 1997. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into Barely Legal. Barely the first ECW pay-per-view. I think the theme of tonight is that this is about being a showcase.
Yep, indeed. Speaking personally, I didn't have much experience with ECW back during its heyday, mostly because, one, I didn't know about it, and two, we didn't get it, so.
Well, I think we're in the same boat. You know, I didn't really get to see ECW until about late 1990, when I came back onto wrestling. In late 1999, and I happened to be, you know, I'm watching, of course, WCW and WWE, and then I come across, like, one of the local sports channels, and they happened at midnight to be playing, you know, ECW TV.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I came upon it at that point. And I think that's one of the great things about the WWE Network that I was really looking forward to was being able to go back and watch ECW in its heyday.
Yeah.
You know, to see the thing, you know, because whenever they show the montage of ECW, they show a lot of things that I never got, you know, the ring stacked with tables, or the scaffolding match.
Or that match with all the chairs being thrown in the ring.
Or Public Enemy having a dance party in the ring, or getting to watch New Jack at all.
Yeah, you would never see New Jack in a WWE ring. Never.
Oh, no, you will never.
Never.
Never. Ever.
Ever.
Yeah, you know how they say never say never? I'm saying never.
Never.
I mean, couldn't you just imagine if they, like, oh, let's just say next year they induct New Jack as the first ECW Hall of Famer?
Oh, God, imagine the promo for that.
Oh, my God, there's no way they'll be able to keep it PG.
In an era of extreme hardcoreness, he was the most hardcore. New Jack came to the ring with a trash can full of weapons and a mind full of hate. This year, the WWE proudly inducts the original gangster, New Jack.
Oh my God, I want it to happen now.
and when he comes out with his induction, with his induction speech, they keep playing original gangsters while he speaks.
But like I said, I'm in the same boat as you. You know, and it's great to go back and finally watch this pay-per-view. And I had watched like several ECW DVDs on Netflix. I mean, that was the best that I had available was Netflix. They would have WWE DVDs, and of course there are the several like best of ECW.
Yeah.
DVDs out there. So like I knew who the Eliminators were and some of the other wrestlers who I hadn't got to see. And speaking of the Eliminators, that brings us to our first match of the evening.
Indeed.
We have the Dudley Boys of Bubba Ray and Devon Dudley, the current ECW World Tag Team Champions, versus the Eliminators of John Cronus and Perry Saturn in a match for the ECW World Tag Team Championship.
And what a fantastic match it was. I mean, before the time, of course, everybody knows who Perry Saturn is, but I didn't think he could move well like that.
Yeah, he took the words right out of my mouth. I mean, I think everybody knows Perry Saturn for Time of Revolution, his time in WCW.
Mm-hmm.
I'm blanking on the group, and I apologize.
Wait, Raven's Flock?
Was he in Raven's Flock? I remember him.
He was in Raven's Flock. I remember him being one of Raven's go-to guys.
I'm talking about when he was with Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko and Shane Douglas.
I can't remember. That may have been before my time, before I actively started watching WCW.
Well, it was in 1999.
Damn. Really? Damn.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, I think when they came together on, it was Road Wild, which... Road Wild, which I forced TWK to watch. And he's still mad at me for that.
Vengeance! Vengeance!
Well, yeah, they formed the stable was called Revolution.
For real?
Okay, see, that's why I got confused.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I was thinking of WWE. In the WWE, they were the Radicals.
Yeah, that I know.
In WCW, they were the Revolution.
Okay, the name sounds familiar. I just can't picture the group. So
the group was Dean Malenko, Shane Douglas, Chris Benoit, and Perry Saturn.
Why do I remember the Natural Born Thrillers than I do this group? What? What? Oh. Oh well, it'll come to me. It'll come to me. So.
But yeah. Anyways, yeah. We're like spending time here talking about something that's not important and considering. What we're trying to say is that we're used to seeing Perry Saturn be a ground wrestler, not a goddamn high flyer doing moonsaults or a 250-pound man doing a 450 fucking splash.
Oh, my God, yes. I mean...
This match was a perfect, I think, emulation to exactly what ECW was all about. In its truth. You know, more than the chairs and the blood and the hardcore matches. This is what ECW is about. I mean, I guess my only criticism of the match is that really the Eliminators controlled the entire match.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess this was like during the Dudley Boys' early years. I'd have to look that up.
Yeah.
They had only gotten started in 96, so they were still a fairly new... I guess, to the business, and the Eliminators had been in the business for a bit.
Yeah.
So,
it was a fantastic opener for this, for ECW's first ever pay-per-view. You had the very dominant Dudley Boys who at the time, and you had the very popular Eliminators, and they put on a freaking clinic. Even though the Eliminators dominated most of the match, they did so in such a visually gratifying sort of way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I talked about the 450 splash. How about when John Cronus does the flips and then flips over the ring ropes?
Yeah, I was like, is Cronus, is that you?
He's like, that's like a 250-pound man. It's like, what? What? How does he do that?
What bizarro world am I watching? What next? Am I going to see John Cena doing backflips and shit off the top rope? What?
I actually wouldn't count that out. I keep having this dream of, like, it's a major pay-per-view for the championship, and John Cena does a 450 splash. And at that one moment, every critic of John Cena is immediately silenced.
Oh, God, what's John Cena doing? He's going to jump off the ropes for a lame. Oh, my God, a 450 from John Cena? Oh, my God!
But, you know, and the total elimination is just a badass finishing move. Just as badass as the Dudley Death Drop.
Yeah, that is an awesome finisher move, and of course Joey Styles expertly put the exclamation point on it when he screamed "Total Elimination!"
Oh my God, Joey Styles in this! There's a reason so many people love Joey Styles as an announcer, and that's it.
Joey Styles is amazing. although I could have used more Joe Gertner, but of course this was the early days for ECW pay-per-view, so we didn't have the quintessential stud muffin just yet.
I love that after their match, like, somebody called Joe Gertner's mother and father, tell him he's not coming home ever.
Joe Gertner, I love you.
So from there we have our second match of the evening. It was scheduled to be Lance Storm versus Chris Candido. God rest his soul.
Yes.
Unfortunately, Chris Candido at the time had been injured and couldn't do it. So his replacement after Chris Candido pay-per-view, which is, I found pretty hilarious, to be honest.
Yeah, Chris Candido can turn up the funny when he had to.
It was Rob Van Dam versus Lance Storm. It was a pretty decent match. The botches were funny.
Yes, there is a Lance Storm match that had botches.
And God bless Joey Styles. There's a point where RVD puts Lance Storm on the top rope, and he goes for his classic springboard off the top rope and kick him. But he falls. and barely hits Lance Storm. And Joey Styles is like, oh my God, Lance Storm tried to counter by shaking the ropes. Meanwhile, you got a crowd in the background going, you fucked up. You fucked up. You fucked up.
Say what you want about ECW. Their crowds were at least honest.
But for me, the most memorable thing about this match is that it's got, and I never thought I'd say this would happen in an ECW pay-per-view or ECW ring.
Mm-hmm.
The weakest chair shot I have ever seen. And Lance Storm did it not once, not twice, three times.
Mike, he might as well have been hitting RVD with pillows. It was so fucking light.
And then RVD takes the chair, throws pick from him, throws it back to him, and hits him with the Van Damme. I'm like, that's how you do a chair shot.
That's how you do a chair shot, bro. It's all good.
But for what it was, I found it to be a decent match.
Yeah, it was decent for a sort of a debut match for, well, both of these guys. I don't know how well known Lance Storm or RVD were at the time, but if this was your first time actually seeing them, this was a good match to get you an idea of what these guys were capable of.
Yeah, I mean, I think they were still rookies in the business, at least as far as, you know, on American promotions at this time.
Yeah, watching RVD's in-ring style, you could see the starts of what his in-ring style would be. It's not as polished as it would become. It's just rough around the edges.
Oh yeah, it became polished by 2003.
Yeah, I mean it. Yeah. If I could liken it to anything, it would be like Michael Jackson's "Don't Stop Till You Get Enough," and "I Want to Rock with You." There, it shows Michael's early evolutions. Like, you could see his movements are good, but they're not where they were going to be. This is RVD's match in that same regard. It's good. You know there's something there. It's just not where it needed to be. He was still young, and he still needed a bit more experience. So it was.
Oh yeah.
So it was interesting to see the how both of these well-known and well-respected in-ring competitors cut their teeth.
Yeah, and I was gonna say the same thing could be said for Lance Storm, who'd become a major part of ECW towards late 98, 99, 2000. So you could definitely see what would make both wrestlers work later on.
Yeah.
Our next match is a six-man tag showcase match from Japan.
Yay!
Brought over from Japan, featuring wrestlers from the Michinoku Pro Wrestling promotion, which at the time was a growing promotion. We have the great Sasuke, Grand Hamada, and Masato Yoshiji, who was replacing Grand Naniwa, who was injured.
Mm-hmm.
Versus the BWO contingent from Japan, which included Taka Michinoku, Terry Boy, and Dick Togo. And the fact that I did not screw up any of those names is a fucking miracle.
Blame it on the anime.
I am thanking the anime. But it should be called a six-man showcase match, because really that's what this was. This was, again, the Michinoku promotion, as they said, was a mixture of Japanese and sort of Lucha Libre wrestling. That God, you saw it in this match. And the way they tagged in and out, and the way, like, it was just people being there really for no reason, and just that whole Lucha Libre of, we have these rules, but we really don't use them.
Pretty much. Anyone can get in the ring anytime they want.
It was a fun match.
Oh, it was like eye candy. I mean, the only person I really recognized from this match was Taka Michinoku, because I was a big mark for him back when he was with with WWE or WWF at the time, when they had cruiserweights, and I was like, who's this Taka Michinoku guy? I like him. He's awesome. I'm gonna cheer for him. So that was already the initial draw for me, but then the match got good.
Yeah. Taka, I think most people who probably never seen ECW, Taka Michinoku will probably be the most well-known. I know of the great Sasuke. I've heard of him. I've seen a couple matches from him before. I hadn't seen Grand Hanade. I hadn't seen Dick Togo or Terry Boy. And I hadn't seen Masato Yoshiji. I do like this. Again, this is another instance where I love the ECW fans. Because Masato enters the ring and they start chanting, Power Ranger! Power Ranger! I'm like, oh my god, that is awesome.
ECW fans. But the thing I want to say about them, about the ECW fans, is that at a lot of points in the pay-per-view, they were very much like a Japanese crowd. I mean, they stay quiet for certain parts of the match, just to let the match play out, and they would cheer or applause if a big move or a big maneuver was pulled off, and go apeshit when even bigger moves or bigger ones would pay off.
Yeah. Or more importantly, or call a wrestler out when they screwed up.
Yeah.
But yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, I think the pivotal point of this is the beginning of this match, when the great Sasuke, Grand Hamada, and Masato Yakushuji comes into the ring, is they throw the streamers, which is a classic Japanese wrestling thing, to where the fans throw streamers and cover them out of respect.
Yeah, and as far as I know, they still do, they do that in ROH.
Oh yeah, they do it in ROH, they do it and they still do it in Japan, and it's great to see. I mean, I would love to see a wrestler in a WWE do that, have that as part of his gimmick, because I think that would be great.
Give it to Adam Rose.
God, no. I will take this boot, shine it up real nice, turn that son of a bitch sideways, and stick it straight up your candy ass, sir.
No love for Adam Rose?
I like Adam Rose. I like Leo Kruger better. He doesn't need streamers. He's got that dance party. That's enough for him.
And the bunny.
And the bunny. The
bunny is awesome.
And the bunny. And his former ex-girlfriend, and his current ex-girlfriend.
And some little people, because you can't have a party without little people.
and sumo wrestlers.
Those two.
Wow. How did this turn into talking about Adam Fine Rhodes?
I don't know.
But, no, but great match, and I liked the ending. I thought it was, I'll try to remember the ending now, which is strange, I can't. I know it was great, I believe it was a maneuver by the great Sasuke who got it. He countered the Michinoku driver number two, and I think he hit like a moonsault, if I remember right.
I think so. I'm trying to remember myself, but it was just so much awesome in that match. It kind of blurred together into one big ball of...
Oh, that's what it was. Sasuke hit Michinoku with a tiger suplex, which is always awesome to see.
Oh. After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hey everyone, my name is Michael Bailey.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we host a podcast called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
Presented by the Superman homepage. On the show... Wait.
What?
This just isn't working out for me. It's not bombastic enough. We need something epic.
Like what?
Welcome to From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, presented by the Superman homepage. I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And I am Michael Bailey.
From Crisis to Crisis chronicles the adventures of Superman.
Wait. I'm just not feeling this.
I'm just wondering how there's a needle scratching sound when all of this is clearly digital.
Look, all we need to say is that this is a trailer for a show called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by the Superman homepage. My name is Michael Bailey.
I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And every week we give in-depth synopsis and reviews for just about every Superman book published between Man of Steel number 1 in 1986
and Adventures of Superman number 649 in 2006. We also talk about the related Superman media, what was happening in the rest of the world when these comics were published, and what else was going on in the DC Universe.
The show drops every Thursday-ish at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com.
From Crisis to Crisis is also a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
So join Jeffrey and I each week as we explore Superman during the post-crisis era, which includes Exile, Panic in the Sky, Doomsday, The Marriage, and beyond.
And write into the show at FromCrisisToCrisis@gmail.com and hear it read on the air, eventually, because we get behind on that sort of thing.
Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Side effects from Crisis to Crisis include loss of money from buying back issues, a desire to read 20-year-old comic books, nausea, drowsiness, pizza, blurred vision, upset stomach, a desire to kick puppies and kittens, and backache from lifting boxes of Superman comics. If the excitement of From Crisis to Crisis lasts more than 4 hours, seek immediate medical attention.
I guess you weren't so tough after all, were you? Now it's time to send you to the next dimension.
291 original episodes.
This can't be. It's still going on.
325 manga chapters.
You act innocent, but you're deadly.
Time to die!
Dozens of characters, hundreds of enemies, and a whole lot of violence.
That kind of violence is pointless!
You see, Super Saiyans tend to be a bit violent.
Oh, crap!
Join hosts Donovan and Jesse as they cover the arrival of the Saiyans, the journey to Namek, the battle with Frieza, the mystery of the androids, and the terror of Majin Buu. The Next Dimension, a Dragon Ball Z podcast. Join the fight at dbznextdimension.libsyn.com.
See ya.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here.
I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
Play it. Come on. Play it loud. Play it loud.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Illogic. Foolish emotions. A constant irritant.
Then transpile out. Freak!
Two!
Come on, the circus. Right next to the dog-faced boy.
True!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Oh,
shit!
It's a super prize package worth $9,388.
This isn't the biggest bag over the head punch in the face I ever got. God damn it!
Ow! Go away, Peyton!
And now, together by live simulation via the internet, your hosts, Scott Gardner.
He killed a police officer, for Christ's sake!
Thank God damn lucky he didn't kill all.
And Chris Honeywell.
Keep away! Keep away from me!
You are physically repulsive, intellectually retarded, vulgar, insensitive, selfish, stupid. You have no taste, a lousy sense of humor, and you smell.
So you're looking at me?
Yeah, because she thought you're some kind of freak. Now come on,
hey,
let's go.
She likes me, eh?
No way.
Shut up, you freak!
Julius, you...
I say shut up! It's a man-house!
TwoTrueFreaks.com.
That brings us to our next match. We have Shane Douglas, the current ECW World Television Champion, aka The Franchise, with the head cheerleader Francine, versus Pitbull number 2 for the ECW World Television Championship. There's also an added stipulation to this match, where if Shane Douglas wins, the masked man that had been following him, who he believes is Rick Rude, must unmask. And this was, I hate to say it, a boring match.
No, you'll find me in agreement. I love Shane Douglas as much as the next guy, but this was probably the weakest match on the card for me.
I mean, and the fans said there were points where they're saying boring, boring.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember the Pitbulls as much, if you remember something about them, but go ahead. But I'm just saying Pitbull number 2 did not impress me at all.
I don't remember the Pitbulls, because again, this is before my time. The only thing I knew about the Pitbulls was I knew that Pitbull number 1 was on ECW One Night Stand 2005, and he's the one who introduced the Memoriam package, which included Pitbull number 2, who had died before ECW 2005.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if there are good things to say about this, I mean, Francine was, oh my God.
Yes. Francine.
Oh, another thing I loved about ECW was the women. Oh, good Lord Jesus Christ.
And I like the women in the WWE today. It's I can't explain it. They just had something about them.
let's call it what it is. It's that women were allowed to be characters rather than role models.
Yeah.
And I know that may seem strange. Like, what, you don't think women should be role models? No, I think women can be role models. But I think far too often, especially these days, women are forced to focus on just being a role model rather than, at least in entertainment, than being characters. Sometimes being a character means being sexy. That's what the character is, yeah. And that's what you have to do. That's not disrespectful to women. That's being a character.
Yeah.
And it's part of the reason the greatest time of the Divas Division in the WWE was in the early 2000s, when you had Trish Stratus, when you had Terry Runnels, when you had Tori Wilson, when you had Lita, and when you had all these, you had Dawn Marie and Sable, and they were all allowed to be their own characters.
Yeah, and they expanded, upon those characters. Like, you know who this particular female is and what she's all about, and how her, and even extends to their ring style to an extent. Sadly, for this generation, they're pretty much sticks with tits. I'm sorry. But,
well, you know, well, it's not even so much that they're sticking tits. What it is that they're all cookie cutter because they're all forced to be role models. Even the heels aren't heels that badly.
Yeah.
You know, they're all, now, mind you, that's changing a little bit. You know, there are some divas that are developing personality. I know people hate me for saying this, but the Bella Twins are one of them. Both of them are developing individual personalities. You have Naomi. You have, hopefully, Tamika will develop a personality now that she's under AJ. AJ had a personality. You had Paige, who has an immensely unique personality.
Yes, she's the anti-diva.
Yeah, and by God, she's doing that scorpion cross lock, and I'm like, thank you, God.
Honestly, I get a boner every time I see her do it. Like, like, yeah, baby, make her tap. Make her tap.
Which I think, by the way, us speaking about all of this speaks mountains about Shane Douglas versus Pitbull number 2.
That's how the quality of that match was, that we stopped talking about that and start talking about the divas of the...
Yeah. Well, I'll say this. It's not Shane Douglas's fault. It was Pitbull number 2.
Yeah.
I just don't think they had great chemistry together. Shane Douglas did a good job in the finish with the belly-to-back suplex. Great, was great. That Pittsburgh plunge.
Mm-hmm.
Great finisher. I will say this. I did enjoy the aftermath match activities.
Yep.
I mean, great swerve. God, the masked man comes out. He's literally got a ravishing Rick Rude.
And everybody's talking it up, and Joey Styles is like, oh, take off that mask. We know it's you, Rick Rude.
I mean, it's like, it's not even trying to attempt to hide it. And then all of a sudden, here comes one of the riot police that was trying to protect Shane Douglas, takes off the helmet. It's Rick Rude. I'm trying to see, the guy who was masked turned out to be Brian Lee. I'm looking at it because I do not have. Wow.
What?
He had been part of WWE as The Undertaker and Chains.
He was the fake Undertaker?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Let me. In 1994, he briefly joined the WWE to perform as an imposter version of The Undertaker.
Whoa.
Yeah, the one that Ted DiBiase introduced in 1994.
Yeah, I remember Taker versus Taker. That I loved Taker versus Taker.
Yeah. So, yeah, he was the fake Undertaker. So, but he was also Brian Lee in ECW, came back, and so that's who he was. So,
huh.
Again, I didn't know much about it all, but I did know Rick Rude, so...
Everyone knows Rick Rude and a magnificent mustache.
A magnificent, we were just talking about him earlier in The Longest Yard.
Yeah.
Burt Reynolds porn stash.
Yeah. Better yet, WWE, if you're listening, if anybody in the WWE is listening to this right now, for next year's class of 2015, I want it to be Ravishing Rick Rude mustache. Just a separate entry for Ravishing Rick Rude's mustache.
Speaking of matches that can be put into a Hall of Fame, let's go on to, I think what we'll agree is the match of the goddamn motherfucking night.
Oh, yeah.
Taz versus Sabu. Of course, Taz with Bill Alfonso in the grudge match of the century. And, of course, before the match, Taz puts on an oh-my-God incredible promo.
Oh, yeah.
And this match, oh, my God. You want to know why I idolize and love Taz? This match is a showcase of why.
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad for everyone who was introduced to Taz when he joined the WWE because he didn't have that much long of an in-ring career. But I try to show them all of his old stuff from ECW, and my God, the man was an absolute animal.
Oh, he was a beast. And don't get it twisted, he was a beast in the WWE for a time there until whatever happened and whatever happened with Creative, which is, I mean, we'll all agree is screwed up and sad, but the same, hey, Taz has made the best of it as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
But at the same point in time, I mean, my God, this match, I mean, the suplexes.
And
and
surprisingly, I can't believe I'm saying this about an ECW pay-per-view or a Sabu match for that matter, but there were very few botches, at least none that I could see.
Well, you know what, the great thing about it is, like, I think the one botch that really comes to mind is there's the botch where he sits at the chair, they have the table draped on the ring apron and the guardrail.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing is he's supposed to do that triple jump, and I guess he's going to try to catch him into a DDT. And I guess if it had happened the way it was going to happen, Taz was going to hold on to the rope, and Sabu was going to go through the table.
Yeah.
Well, Taz seemingly slipped, and so in midair, Sabu stops the jump and lands inside the ring. And the way they did it made it seem organic to where it didn't seem like a botch.
Yeah, I didn't really notice.
Yeah, I mean, Taz tries to suplex him. Sabu counters. He gets on. He's then on the outside at that point. Gets on the rope, tried to go for the DDT. He holds it, and it works just as well.
Yeah. And this match was, I know the word grudge match gets thrown around a lot in professional wrestling, but this match was the definition of grudge match.
I mean the build up over the months, was epic for this match.
And that whole promo by Taz, I mean, I've seen some pretty crazy Taz promos, but nothing like that. I mean, he's like, I hate you, you hate me, and I'm getting goosebumps. I'm gonna hurt you. I'm gonna choke you out. And I was like, damn, Taz.
Sabu, you know what I would be? You. Or however, he put it in a unique way that I'm like, oh, yes.
And what sold me on this match was the very beginning, when Taz came out, and then Sabu just ran to the ring, no music or introduction whatsoever. I mean, he was like, fuck this entrance shit. Let's fight right now. Come on, I can't wait.
Yes, and that was awesome. And then, of course, the other thing that's about this match that makes it historic is the turning by Bill Alfonso and the formation. I mean, they had been tag team partners, but really the cementation of Sabu and RVD being tag team partners.
Yeah, because
no.
So I didn't actually know this until I saw the pay per view that this was the time when Bill Alfonso became their manager, because I've always associated RVD or Sabu with Bill Alfonso.
Yeah.
So this was very interesting to me to watch the genesis of how that whole group got started on camera. So I was like, wow, this is how they hooked up by betraying Taz. Wow.
Well, they had been tag team partners before then, I think for a couple months, but they didn't get Bill Alfonso until this match.
That's what I mean. I knew they were, they mentioned that they were tag team partners, but I mean when they hooked up with Bill Alfonso.
Yeah.
So I was like, this is when Bill Alfonso hooked up with Sabu and Taz. I'm like, wow, that's pretty interesting.
Yep. Well, that brings us to our final match of the night, which is a double thing.
Mm-hmm.
We have Terry Funk, the living legend, or hardcore legend at least, because
mm-hmm.
They introduce him as the living legend. I'm like, wait a minute, isn't that Bruno Sammartino?
Wait a minute, I thought that was Larry Zbysko. I was like, Larry Zbyszko's in this match?
But Terry Funk versus The Sandman versus Stevie Richards with his BWO contingent of the Blue Meanie, Hollywood Nova, and Thomas Rodman and 7-Eleven.
Blue World Order.
Oh, God. You know what? I have to agree with what Joey Styles said about the Blue World Order in ECW One Night Stand 2005. They are the greatest. If anybody ever deserved to make a dime off somebody else.
The Blue. Next year's class of Hall of Fame 2015, the Blue World Order.
But this match is a three-way dance to determine the number one contender for the ECW World Heavyweight Champion. And the thing is, the winner would face Raven immediately after the match for the ECW World Heavyweight Championship. And, of course, in ECW, the three-way dances work a little bit different. It's not a triple threat to where it's one fall to a finish.
Mm-hmm.
It's elimination style.
Okay.
Well, I know you know.
Yeah.
I'm saying for those at home who may not know. I know the audience that I'm talking to probably certainly knows, but again, just in case.
Yeah, just for those people that came in late.
Yeah. So, you know, it was an interesting match. It was a classic sort of ECW hardcore weapons match.
Pretty much. I mean, yeah, I don't know if you've watched WWE Countdown or not.
Oh, yeah, I do.
And you remember what they said about Sandman's entrance, right?
I actually haven't seen that episode yet.
Basically, they were counting down the top 10 greatest entrances of all time, and Sandman's was number 10. And
yeah.
Everyone was like, man, Sandman's entrance was awesome. It was amazing. We had guys like Joey Styles and Paul Heyman and RVD, all these guys talking about his entrance. And then they say, the match? Yeah, it was terrible. And Joey Styles was like, Sandman was horrible in the ring. And this match sort of fit with Sandman's whole persona. He's not a technical wrestler.
I don't think they were saying he was a bad wrestler. They just said he wasn't a wrestler. I think what they're trying to say is that he wasn't a, you know, he wasn't a tactician. He was a horrible wrestler.
Yeah.
He was a brawler. That's what he was. He swung that cane.
And that was it.
Yeah. I mean, he had some interesting moves. I mean, the descent, the swanton off the top rope, through the person, sometimes on the ladder, the rolling rock, the white Russian leg sweep. I mean, he had some maneuvers, but for the most part, I mean, he was a brawler. He hit people. He was one hairline fracture away from being Balls Mahoney.
Oh, God.
It's true.
Oh, God.
It's true. But that's why we liked him.
Yeah, and this match played well into his strengths. These three guys just beat the ever-loving shit out of each other.
In particular, Big Stevie.
Yes.
They beat the shit. I mean, this is the point of the match. They don't just have a trash can in this match.
Yeah.
They have a trash can wrapped in steel.
Wrapped in steel.
Because, you know, the steel trash can isn't enough. They need the steel trash can reinforced with steel.
Hey.
They brought barbed wire into this match, which is hilarious as hell because it was stuck on the streamers that were thrown from the Japanese patch.
Oh. How the hell did that happen anyway?
I think they shoved it into the ring and not realizing the barbed wire's there, so when they came to bring the barbed wire, it's all tangled up with the streamers. And I'm like, how are the streamers even staying on? It's barbed wire. Cut it.
I would just say that was the most colorful beatdown I have ever seen using barbed wire.
Yes. But, you know, for what it is, a decent match, which brings us to, of course, the final one. Terry Funk, of course, wins.
Yes.
With help of Big Stevie. You know, Big Stevie Cool gets eliminated first, come back, does a super kick on By the way, that was the one botch of the match, was the moonsault by Terry Funk on Stevie Cool.
Yeah.
Which was Stevie Richards' fault, because he wasn't in the right place.
God,
the
gifts from that one move alone.
It's like, he's nowhere near him, and yet the fan, and God bless the fans, they jump up and cheer, like, oh my God, he hit him. So if you were listening to the audio, you wouldn't know there was a botch. But if you watch it, there's a botch.
Yeah, would you want to be in that crowd to tell Terry Funk that he fucked up?
I'd probably get beaten by the rest of the crowd.
Hey, Terry, you fuck. What did you say? That was an amazing moonsault, Terry Funk. Yeah. Not a botch at all.
Made up for it later, though, with a sort of twisting moonsault that he pinned Sandman with. He's good for one good moonsault tonight, and that's it.
That was the good one?
The good one was the one that Stevie Richards botched on.
You get one moonsault, that's it.
I can't promise a second good one.
If you want me to do a second good one, you got to give me some Jack Daniels and a couple of bitches.
but that brings us to the fourth and final match. Terry Funk wins, and so out comes Raven as immediately starts beating on him. This is sort of that class. It's hardly a match. I mean, a match goes on, but for the mostly, it's Raven beats down Funk. Now, a little backstory here. At the beginning of that three-way dance, they bring out Tommy Dreamer, who had given up his spot to Terry Funk,
mm-hmm.
to do commentary with Joey Styles. And so when Raven comes out, of course, Raven has been feuding with Tommy Dreamer and him and his flock. And, of course, they have the girl who does the botched-up powerball.
Oh, that's... I thought she was a dude at first.
That's a girl. That was some boobs.
Hey,
I know boobs.
There have been men with some substantial man boobage.
Okay, yeah, but those were women boobs. Trust me, I have seen enough boobs in my life to know what women boobs are.
No, I'm just saying from behind, she looked like a dude. It's just hey, that looks like Raven got a new dude in his group. Like, whoa, wait, that's a woman?
I mean, it was impressive to see a woman do that power bomb, but at the same time, botched it up pretty much. But, of course, the whole thing leading is they're trying to goal Tommy Dreamer into coming down. They have, like, three tables set up because the announcing table is on this stage. It's, like, above the crowd. And so they set these three tables. Now comes Big Dick Dudley.
Fresh out of jail.
Tries to chokeslam Tommy Dreamer. Tommy Dreamer counters. And I'll say he pushes Big Dick Dudley down through the tables. He was trying to choke slam him. He couldn't lift Big Dick Dudley up. So it looked more like he pushed him.
Oh. It's hard to lift that much dick at one time.
And of course this leads to Terry, Dreamer comes to the ring, hits the DDT, Funk tries to pin Raven, he kicks out. Which, of course, leads to another botch by the ring announcer. Because the bell rings, and it's a two count. And then Funk puts Raven into a small boy for the 1-2-3. And then they ring the bell again. So does that mean the match is back on?
That was very confusing for a lot of people. Like, wait a minute, did they restart the match or what? What happened there?
But, you know, it was an interesting end to the pay-per-view. Raven had been champion for a while, and so, again, it was just continuing that feud between him and Dreamer.
Yeah, and more important, and most likely, if a lot of people were expecting Extreme out of this pay-per-view, but up until this point, there wasn't a lot of Extreme, to say the least, at least a lot of blood or what have you. I mean, sure, Taz and Sabu beat the ever-loving piss out of each other, but it was a relatively clean match. These last two matches were just straight-up, balls-to-the-wall Extreme.
Yeah. And, you know, it's nothing more extreme than a 52-year-old man winning the World Heavyweight Championship.
After two moonsaults.
After two moonsaults!
And
I mean, it was fun, and it was an interesting way for ECW to end the pay-per-view.
Yeah. So it was... I was satisfied with it. Yep. If I was new to ECW, I would enjoy the hell out of this pay per view. If I was new to ECW back then.
Yeah. Well, you're kind of getting into, you know, what I was gonna go to next is, what did you think of this pay per view?
And like I said, as an opener, it was for ECW's first official venture into the land of PPV. It was the best. First pay-per-view I've ever seen in a while. I mean, it had a lot of solid matches. I mean, the only low match was the Pitbull versus Franchise match, and it was at least watchable from a storytelling standpoint. But overall, I was genuinely impressed with what I saw, and it was interesting to see all these people that are mainstays of the our big names and mainstays of the industry, how they were back in the day. I mean, you saw the beginnings of RVD, the young Team 3D before they became one of the greatest tag teams in professional wrestling history. You saw a young Lance Storm. You saw some great Japanese action that probably a lot of American fans never saw. You saw the continuation of one of the greatest feuds in not just ECW, but in professional wrestling history, and you saw a hardcore legend go over as a world champion. So, I for those of you who are trying to look for ECW pay-per-views or shows to watch to understand why this brand is so beloved as it is today, watch this one. Watch the very first one, and you'll see why. This is more than just garbage wrestling. This is wrestling that has heart.
Yeah. What would you say are the three best matches of the night?
Let's see. Number one, of course, Sabu versus Taz. I mean, like I said, it is the definition of grudge match. I mean, from start to finish, you could see that these two did not like each other. There was some respect there, but they just did not like each other, and they just wanted to rip each other apart in the worst possible way. And that was just incredible to watch it unfold like that.
No.
And at the end, we saw the formation of one of the greatest partnerships in ECW history, with Sabu, RVD, finally teaming up with the coach of champions, Mr. Bill Alfonso.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Second match, I'm trying to think. Second match, I'd say the first match for the World Tag Team titles, the Dudley Boys versus the Eliminators. I mean, if you are at least passingly aware of who Perry Saturn is, and you want to know what he was like before he became the dude who talked to a mop, this is the match for you. Or if you wanted to see what the Dudley Boys were like before they had those epic TLC matches with the Hardys and Edge and Christian at WrestleMania, before they were running roughshod over the WWE's tag team division, before Bully Ray became Bully Ray, one of the best heels working in professional wrestling right now, this is a good match to see.
Well, he's not a heel anymore, but that's besides the point.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I couldn't help it.
It's okay.
He put over Eric Young last Thursday night.
And for that, you deserve the Hall of Fame. Not the cheap one, not the Motel 6 buffet line Hall of Fame, Bully Ray. I mean the big one.
WWE.
WWE with the suits and ties and the Titantrons. And the good food.
And then your third match tonight?
Third match, I'd have to give it to Rob Van Dam and Lance Storm.
Interesting.
As I've said before, it's interesting to see where these two got their start. Sure, the match was a bit botchy at times, but you could see that there was greatness in both of them. You could see the beginnings of the technical machine that was Lance Storm. I mean, you could see the beginnings of the man who would become known as the whole damn show, Rob Van Dam. And this will probably be the only time you'll ever see Lance Storm with a mullet. I know that's hard to believe. Wait a minute. Shin Tiger Curl, Lance Storm with a mullet? Are you on crack? No. Lance Storm has a mullet. Watch this match. But yeah, those are my top three. Those are my top three matches of Barely Legal.
And I agree with you. I found the entire pay-per-view to be enjoyable. I agree with you. This is a perfect example of what ECW was about. From top to finish, with the exception of the Shane Douglas pitbull match, which it was passable, it was just boring, but all the matches were pretty good. Some were just really top form. It's a great introduction to what this paper. It's also a great introduction to one of the things that made ECW so great, which was the fans.
Yeah.
You know, the fans in this pay-per-view were absolutely awesome from start to finish. And it's one of the things that really made ECW grand. And like you said, the beginnings for a lot of these superstars that we would come to know later. For me, that was a big thing. As far as me for the three best matches, I think we agree number one was Taz and Sabu. Mm-hmm. I think we agree number two was the Eliminators versus Dudleys. Where I'll disagree with you is my third best match of the night was the Japanese match.
Oh, damn, I completely forgot about that one. What the crack was I thinking?
I thought that RVD and Lance Storm was a pretty good match, but I guess the thing is, I'll be honest, Lance Storm's weak chair shots kind of hurt the match.
Since you reminded me, can I change my
sure.
My third favorite match of this card was the Japanese six man tag. Sorry, I'm sorry, Lance Storm, if you're listening, but you don't throw chair shots that way. I'm taking your man card right now. I'm taking your man card until you hit better chair shots. Your man card is in my possession.
Or until he gets Don Marie.
That too. So until you get Don Marie, man card, property of Shin Tiger Curl.
So final rating for the pay-per-view on a scale of 1 to 5?
1 to 5. I've given this one a 4.5 out of 5.
I'm going to give it just a solid 4. I mean, it's a solid pay-per-view. There's one weak match in it. And there's some botches here, not as many as we'd see in ECW, in other ECW matches, but still enough botches there and everything. The one thing is that it's really a showcase pay-per-view,
yeah.
Which there's nothing wrong with it, but there's a difference between a showcase and something that is like, my God, this is a pay-per-view, these are all epic confrontations. This is really about showcasing exactly what ECW is about.
Yeah.
And as such, it did it perfectly.
Yeah, TNA could learn a lot from a pay-per-view like this. I mean, if you want,
TNA tried to learn a lot from the ECW, and they failed.
Yes. It takes more than just shock storylines and swerve after swerve. If you want to get people into your product, showcase the talent at their best.
Yeah. You just don't bring in former ECW talent and just have hardcore matches all day long.
Yeah, or bring in old ass wrestlers who have no business being there and to go over on the younger talent.
Yeah. Now, I will say this. I think it's official. I'd say it's not official, but, you know, Eric Young's World Heavyweight Championship, they're getting pretty good. If they would just take the titles off the Bromans and give it to the Wolves, I think we can officially say that the boycott of TNA would be officially over.
I would say give the titles to any two random members of the TNA crowd, and that would be better than the Bromans. But he had give the world tag team titles to Hard Gay. He doesn't need a tag team partner. Just give it to Hard Gay. He will make those titles worth it.
Doesn't Eric Carter and Rockstar Spud have a tag team title?
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
They lost that to James Storm and Gunner.
Oh, so no wonder the cash in didn't work.
No. No.
I missed that.
Yes.
But yeah. So 4.5 from Shin Tiger, 4 out of me. Solid pay per view. I think we'll both agree.
Yeah.
Check it out. It's one of the ECW pay per views you have to check out. So that is it for this episode, Shin Tiger. This is the part where I tell you to put your best Godfather act on, and I would like you to pimp everywhere people can find you.
Yes. You can find me, of course, on YouTube. Just type in Shin Tiger Curl. And, of course, I have to pimp other stuff as well, if that's okay with you, Mattis.
Oh, it's your time to pimp.
All right. As I've said last week, this is a good time for any fighting game fans out there to go and check out Shoryuken.com for latest and greatest in fighting game news. This is currently Evo season, so all the major tournaments will be leading up to Evolution 2014 from Las Vegas, Nevada this July. Over 12 in fighting games, thousands of participants from over 15 countries. So if you're in Las Vegas, go check it out, or if not, watch it on stream provided by Team Spooky or Furby NYC. And
will they have it on YouTube?
Huh?
Will they have it on YouTube?
Yes. Team Spooky has a YouTube channel where they upload all the videos from all the tournaments and all the specific matches, the top threes, and I mean the top eights, the top threes, depending on how long they run. You can also check out the Level Up series. They do great tournaments, and also do the run back tournament every Thursday night. And also for your video gaming needs, check out my boy, Mr. Dante Nickens, and the video game console junkies roundtable every Sunday night at 9 o'clock on twitchtv.com, where if you subscribe, get some information in, and you may actually win some prizes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I can't wait. I'm very anxious. You said, do you know which games are going to be part of the tournament? Because I definitely know Street Fighter will more than likely.
For Evo or for the tournaments coming up?
Well, I would say for Evo, because you said, 12 different fighting games will be part of Evo?
Let's see. The ones I can name off the top of my head, we got Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom, of course, is the biggest draw. Then we have...
Really?
Yeah, Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom is probably the most hyped game that is played at Evo.
Oh, wow. You know, because I would have thought it would be Street Fighter.
Street Fighter is just under that. But I'll say this, Street Fighter is the most international game.
Okay.
Because a lot of Japanese and Asian players do not play Marvel vs. Capcom.
Okay.
They just, for some reason, they don't like to play it. It's too easy for them. Yeah.
See, and don't get me wrong, I love Marvel vs. Capcom 3. Oh, God, I got the collector's edition, by the way.
Yeah.
With everything. And, first thing, I'm like, oh, my God, I love that they made it so easy to play. Like, even I can be good at this game. So,
yeah.
Which I think makes the game really fun. But I'm very shocked to learn that, you know, Marvel... And, again, I see that because it is a great game. But it's like I've always thought of Street Fighter because it's the international one.
Yeah, Street Fighter is the more international one. It's the more technical game. I mean, not to mention, I'm not even sure if they're going to do Super Street Fighter this year, since just before Evo, they're going to bring in Ultra Street Fighter 4.
Yeah.
And for those who don't know, Ultra Street Fighter will have 5 new characters to add it to the massive roster, and it will also include a special edition select where you can select which version of each individual character you want to play as. So in case that you liked how Sagat played in the original Street Fighter 4, you can play as him. Or if you want to play as Super Street Fighter 4 Yun, you can play as him.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically pick and choose. Okay. But Super Street Fighter 4 has a large international community, And a matter of fact, last year's Evo may have been the most stacked Street Fighter tournament we've ever had at Evo.
Oh, yeah. And I definitely want to get into it because this past September, I got that big Street Fighter Anniversary Collection that got released.
Mm-hmm.
I picked that up it wasn't this past September, it was September before, but I picked it up, and of course that came with the DVD, and that great documentary, which highlighted that great Street Fighter Alpha match, with the perfect parry.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about the Beast Daigo Imahara versus
yes.
Justin Wong. That is the one of the all-time legendary videos
matches
in the fighting game community. I mean, when you talk about... Daigo Imahara is considered to be, by many, to be one of the greatest fighting game players on the planet right now.
Yeah.
I mean, last year, he was in the top eight last year, and he was with a group of guys. I mean, there's this group of guys in Japan called the Five Gods of... I am shitting you. This is what they call them, the Five Gods of...
You know you're badass when you start calling yourselves gods.
Now, this is what people call them.
I know.
And we actually had, out of all the top eight competitors, half of the field was made up of four of the five gods of fighting games. And it was a very, very stacked tournament. And so I hope this year is gonna see a lot. We got a lot of up-and-comers. And as for the other games, Injustice is going to be back for a second year.
Okay.
Let's see. Super Smash Brothers will be making a return here. I mean, last year it almost didn't make it to Evo because Nintendo didn't want them to play Super Smash Brothers at Evo.
Which explains everything to why Nintendo is failing right now,
exactly.
But that's a whole different story.
But then Showworking.com was like, hey, Super Smash Bros. Is part of this tournament scene. So in a span of a week before Evo, we had a massive 200,000-plus petition to Nintendo to let them add Smash Bros. To Evo. 3 days before Evo started, Smash Bros. Was back on.
Nice. I would imagine it's Tekken. Part of the tournament?
Tekken Tag Tournament is the Tekken game for this one.
Okay.
It came out last year, and it had a pretty good audience, had a pretty good showing. A lot of French people played Tekken Tag for some reason.
I love Tekken. Tekken's my favorite.
Yep. Let's see. We got games like Guilty Gear, Melty Blood.
Melty Blood.
Yep. Blaze Blue Continuum Shift. Let me see. Super Turbo, of course. I'm trying to think.
Skullgirls, because I know that's been popular.
Skullgirls was, I think Skullgirls got kicked last year, but because they're releasing more people for Skullgirls this year, they're probably going to bring it in. I hope so. I love Skullgirls.
Now I'm hoping they'll release it for the PS4 so I can finally pick it up.
Yeah, so me too. So, that's all the ones I can name. I know there's more, but Killer Instinct is definitely in this year.
Oh, Killer Instinct.
Killer Instinct is growing in popularity, so it's gonna be at Evo.
I hate. You do not know how much I loathe that is Xbox exclusive.
Yep, people are saying the same thing, but. We just got a deal, but yeah, if you are speaking as a fellow fighting game fan, Mattis, watch some of these tournaments. They span whole weekends.
I'm planning to this year.
Yeah.
If nothing else, to watch the videos afterwards of the contests on YouTube.
Yeah, because and as for them, there are a lot of fighters to watch. They're like the top dogs of certain games to watch for, for Marvel, like the number one ranked Marvel player in the world is New York's Chris G.
Mm-hmm.
He plays Morgan, Doom, Virgil. It's a very hard team to get over. I mean, he has fought pretty much everyone there is to fight in the entire country, no one has been able to consistently beat him. He always places first or in the top three of every tournament he enters.
Yeah. I'll say this. My team in Marvel is Spider-Man, Deadpool, and Dante.
Ooh.
And I don't know if that's a common team or whatever.
No, it's not.
But it's a very good fast pace, especially for air juggling.
You're going to see a lot of air juggling. I mean, in professional Marvel, it's called one touch kill. If you get touched one time, that character is dead, depending on who it is. they will just go into combos that last for days, like 100, 200 hit combos, and just go for days and days and days. Like, oh my gosh, stop it. It's just vicious. But, other players you need to watch out for: Filipino Champ. He's a good player, but nobody likes him. let's see. Dominion, the blackest man in professional gaming. let's see. Pretty Ricky Ortiz. He's a great player. Saban. Who else? Flocker. It's thanks to Flocker that we see a lot of zeros getting played. Because there's like a trick to zero that they call the zero loop, where zero can go into this endless loop that can just drain away your character's life. Mm-hmm. So a lot of players have been picking up zero a lot.
Yeah. My other combo, by the way, is Morgana, Jean Grey, and Storm.
Wow.
That's I call it my etchy group.
but one guy you really need to look out for is Mr. IFC Yipes.
Okay, you're getting me excited for this.
I mean, you should be excited. I mean, IFC Yipes is probably the most well-liked and most respected man in all of FGC. He started out as a player from New York City, and he just got big. And it's got to the point where he even has his own tournament, the Curly Mustache Invitational. and they call it Curly Mustache because his commentary is just ridiculous. When he's on commentary, it's like having Bobby Heenan on the mic.
Oh, my God. You got to send me some videos after we're done recording so I can...
He is like, yo, son, oh, that move was Pringles. Oh, look at that kid. Oh, finish your plate, son.
Okay, did you pip everything? Because now I want to finish the episode so you can send me some videos.
Yeah, stuff out there. I'll send it to you when this is over.
Yeah. So that thank you, Doom. I think we just extended the podcast for a half hour just talking about gaming.
Yeah. Gotta educate.
Yes, and of course, guys, you can remember to check out all my other content that I hear. Of course, Tom's Prerogative. First off, let me remind you of all the places you can find, or email me, or if you have any comments or anything. One, you can email at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also leave us comments on Facebook that you can find by going to www.facebook.com and by checking out, searching for The Absolution Network. Like us and leave us a comment there. And of course, you can always leave a comment on the site itself that you can find by going to www.an.132productions.com. As I also said, remember to check out all the other 132 Productions content that, of course, includes the Otaku Momentum and Tom's Prerogative right here on the Absolution Network. Of course, the Shaft Post podcast with Gene and Chris, where they talk anime and talk a lot of great stuff. You can find that at www.shaftplus.com. You can also make sure to check out my Godzilla podcast, which in Tokyo SOS, which you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And, of course, my comic book crazy podcasting site, which includes Spectacular Webs, Hexcast, and, of course, CM Jews, Comic Book Crazy. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, remember to check out all our friends, of course, Shin Tiger Curl, Matty J and the WrestleCast, Michael Bailey and Views from the Long Box, Brad Douglas' Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Schleicher's Major Spoilers, and, of course, Scott Gardner's Two Freaks Podcasting Network, among many others on the sidebar of the site. Check them out. They do great stuff. So that is it for this episode. Shin Tiger Curl, thank you so much, man.
Hey, I had a blast on the show, man. We got to do this again sometime.
Oh, we're going to do this again. Hey, look, June, I have an epic podcast planned.
I'm there.
I'll just say this. King of the Ring and the year 1998.
Color me interested.
But that's not what next week's review can be, because we're still in April. You know, April is a time where spring is officially blooming, and, you know, spring is here. That means warm weather, hot dogs, baseball, and you know what? Stampedes. Yes, I said stampedes. Yes, stop groaning. We are going back to WCW. As on our next episode, we're going to cover WCW Spring Stampede. Which one? Just have to tune in to find out. So until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. C.M. Jew. I'm the best Jew in the world!
Every day I pray to get to know ya. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, I believe it. I'm too negative, but I believe. Yes, I believe. I said I believe. I stand on my feet, one be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might and get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight unto the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. I give myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be holy in a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the layers and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Your mother's a little fast life, but your dream.